Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Here at Katanerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Katanerds podcast for well over 5 of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX repair suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio, EQ, and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
What's the difference between a poorly dressed man on a bicycle and a well-dressed man on a unicycle?
I don't know.
Attire.
Hello, dear listener. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Philip Carter.
Hello there.
Hello there. Hello, Philip. Philip from the 40 Watt Podcast, dear listener. You probably know that by now because this podcast is fantastic. And also because we've had you on this, on our series, like a bunch of times this year. This is
weaseling my way in.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's because you're so good and so much fun to talk to on the podcast, which is why we keep asking you back. But we are
It's really you just need someone to be contrary, and so that you can save you don't have to be the contrary one on here.
That's it. Yeah, I could never get Matt to dislike anything. So yeah, that's exactly why. But this is the 13th episode. Welcome back, dear listener. 13th episode in season 4. So I don't know, is this like your 4th episode with us?
With all of the gear of the years, yeah. It all sort of runs together. I'm not really sure anymore.
No, exactly. But yes, welcome back, dear listener. So last week it was me and it was JD and I. This week it's Philip and me, and then I think Matt's back next week. But we're last week I had to record the podcast early and have it out late because I was going on tour. This week I've got back from tour, but I got back from tour on the day that I'd normally record the podcast, so we're recording it a day later. And this isn't really interesting information for you, dear listener. I'm sorry, I don't know why I've gone off on these specifics, but we're moderately late this week. Apologies for that. But we've got lots of talk to talk about because I've just got back from the mainland of Europe on a tour with my band Polymath. So I want to talk about all the gear that I saw in mainland Europe because it's wonderful how different it always is. I mean, everything's always, you know, the stuff that you get in the US compared to Canada even is different to the UK, to mainland Europe. It's always interesting seeing what the trends are at the sort of the lower levels, you know, the 250 cap venue type part-time band circuit. It's always interesting to see what people are using. So we're going to talk about some of that. And of course,
NAMM is, we're on the doorstep of NAMM. So people are starting to release stuff. Obviously, the pandemic, everything else has seen, a bit of a reduction in the amount of things that have been released over the last couple of years. It feels like people are starting to release things again. Unfortunately, most companies seem to just be doing different colors of things at the moment, but there are some cool and exciting things that we're going to talk about those as well. Apologies at the start. Normally we would do the topic of the week decided by the spinning of the wheel, but because I was away, I didn't get a chance to ask Suresh from last week, who won the spinning of the wheel, what his topic would be. So we're not doing that this week, and I'll get in touch with him this week, and we'll do that next week. Oh, first of all, then, Philip, how are you? How's it going?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, I'm sad that I'm missing NAMM because I've never been to a California NAMM. I've only been to the one summer NAMM in Nashville.
I see.
And it was kind of a sad one too. It was that 2021 one that was kind of a ghost town.
Yes.
But I feel like that was a great primer for NAMM. Like I was like, hey, here's the tutorial, and then we'll get to the real game later. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I really hope it's good. I'm not going either this year. It's a weird time halfway through the year. I'm still, yeah. I'm not going to get into the NAMM debate on the podcast, but I'm still sort of, I'm waiting to see what happens this year because it's still missing a lot of brands. You know, some people were very excitedly gearing up for it, and it's going to have lots of great brands there, but certainly a lot of the big companies are missing, and there's some question over whether or not, you know, NAMM missing that massive cash flow that comes from those big companies is going to allow it to continue in the same way it's doing. I'm waiting to see.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because I think the next year's is slated to be back at their usual January time. So
that's right, yeah.
We've only got, I don't remember now. I can't maths. what have we got? 9 months until the next NAMM after this one? Next California NAMM.
Yeah, exactly. Which seems odd, doesn't it? That is that's a short space of time for all these brands to get another run of gear together for.
Yes, exactly.
I wonder if that's going to, you know, almost it needs to have the April one, this January one, and then the next January one could be back to full strength, whether or not, you know, the organization can, you know, weather that.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
That'll be the interesting thing. I'm interested to see how this one goes. You know, I've got lots of friends going, so I'll get their reports back, and then that'll decide whether or not I'm going to try to make the trip in January. And then there's the question, is the Nashville one just dead? Are they going to even consider it again? I mean, obviously it's not happening this year because April to June would be way too quick.
Yeah, yeah. I really hope not. My opinion on the California NAMM is, this is going to be unpopular with the listeners. I'm not a massive fan of California. I'm sorry. I'm very English and European. It's really hot and everything's really big. But also the event's too big. I almost get anxiety going to them. I can't see everything. I just end up completely exhausted. It's too big for me to actually see all the things that makes it worthwhile. And I've not been to the Nashville one. And everyone who goes to the Nashville one just says how amazing it is.
Yeah, with 2021 being an exception. Obviously.
Oh, yes, obviously.
Extenuating circumstances. So from what I hear, I can only tell you what I've heard from other people that have been, whereas the California NAMM is massive because it's everything, right? Right. Yeah. We're guitar players. We think about the guitar stuff, but there's, you know, there's wind instruments and there's keyboards and drums and there's, you know, folk and there's all sorts of stuff going on. And there's that at the Summer NAMM too. But from what I've understood, Summer NAMM's always been just a little more guitar centric,
right?
Because Nashville's a guitar town.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It just seems cool. The events in the evening in Nashville always seem like they're a bit cooler and a bit easier to stroll around and get involved in. I found half of my day at NAMM, at the California NAMM, is trying to work out who's doing what in the evenings to know where within potentially an hour's drive radius that I need to get to see things. And, you know, that's just the evening stuff. In the day, once I accidentally ended up on the drum floor, I think it took me 45 minutes to get out. You know, I didn't want to see any of those drum things, but that was 45 minutes in the festival. I was never going to get back. So
it's like wandering New Orleans and accidentally ending up on Bourbon Street, and you're like, I'm never going to get to leave here. This is right. Just sucked me in. I can't get through the sea of people.
Well, yeah. So I'm a bit. I'm a fan of a slightly smaller festival. So I do hope that Nashville returns. I'm looking forward to Guitar Summit in Mannheim in Germany.
Oh,
in September.
See, as you said Guitar Summit, and in my brain, I went to Fretboard Summit, which is what Jason Verlinde over at Fretboard Journal does every August. And they're back, well, I'll say every August. I don't know if it's every August, but they did it last year. I went last year, hung out with Barry from Grez Guitars. Right. I'm going to go again this year. This year, I'm going to actually go to like the full event. Last year, I was already in Chicago for something else. I was actually, my wife and I were on vacation. We went to see Ariel Posen and hang out with some friends in Chicago. Oh, it was great. It just happened to be the same weekend. I swear, listeners, it was an accident. I didn't do it on purpose that it was the same weekend as Fretboard Summit. But yeah, so this year, my wife, Barry, was very kind and put me as a guest on his guest list so I could get in to come hang out for a little bit. And it was great. And so I'm going to go this year. And I got a few hours last time. I'm going to go for the whole event this year. I'm super pumped.
Right.
Guitar Summit's a different thing. So tell me about Guitar Summit.
Well, no, that sounds absolutely wonderful. Guitar Summit, it's something that that I went to with Ashdown last year. Now, I had an issue with the event. It was Mannheim in Germany is a fantastic place, wonderful to go to. Brilliant city, and the event setting was gorgeous. It was big. You had loads of great, wonderful, interesting German brands that I just wouldn't come across if I hadn't been at the event. A lot of German luthiers seem to not like social media or Instagram, they just seemed harder to get access to. So being able to see them firsthand was really nice at Guitar Summit. The thing I really hated was it was a quiet show. Now, part of this was because I'd taken Ash down there with a bunch of our massive amps, and it's my fault for not realizing that it was a silent show, but I was like, what is even the point in us being here? What is the point? There's none. I can run people on headphones so you get a vague idea of what the preamp might possibly do. I really disliked it as an idea. Bear in mind, they had it across like three or four floors. Put the amp brands on one floor and make that a loud floor if you want. You know, there were so many options that I feel would have made it better. Also, this is well documented on Guitar Nerds. I don't like the concept of a silent show. Anyway, I know people complain about shows being loud, but this is rock and roll. It's loud. It's our hobby is a loud thing. You know, take up Warhammer if you want something to do quietly. This one is supposed to be loud. Invest in some good earplugs. But yeah, I want to hear
get behind
stuff.
The silent thing. I get it. I really, really do. I hear you, all of you people. But I'm like, apparently there are. So we've had this conversation in some chat groups that I'm in, and in some Discord groups that I'm in, and we talk about this all the time. And a lot of people are going, this is outside of just guitar shows, just the whole silent stage thing too. Like, it's like they're constantly trying to quiet the music. Like music is an inconvenience to this thing you're going to, especially when I get really frustrated most when you go to a concert and they treat the volume like it's an inconvenience. You signed up to come to this. Like, this is a music show. You should expect some volume. But besides that, like, I have people trying to pressure me into getting into like Quad Cortex and some other things like that. I'm like, they don't excite me. They don't make me excited. But also, I don't trust sound people. As an audio engineer myself who worked in a club, I don't trust sound people. Most of the clubs I play, not that I play that many anymore, but you know, that I did play when I was playing a ton, they put the vocals through the PA and that was it. Your amp was the sound for the whole venue. Or if they mic'd you up, that's awesome. You didn't get put back into the monitors because there were no monitors. So I can't use Quad Cortex. I can't use a silent system because then I wouldn't be playing. Like, it wouldn't be possible. So, and that's the majority of the small clubs that I and all of my peers play.
Sure. Yeah.
So the taking the volume out of music is just like, I don't know, you're taking the soul out of it to me. But
yeah. Yeah, there are plenty of people that will disagree with us on that.
Yeah, but, please, but, yeah, come, but, come and disagree with me, please. Let's go. I'm ready. We can scrap.
He loves it.
I'm
he
ready.
Loves it. but yeah, so despite the silent show, there's so many gorgeous instruments there that I'm very much looking forward to Guitar Summit. Actually, another one we've got coming up in the UK is the Brighton Guitar Show, or the Brighton FX Expo. It's coming up in either June or July. Oh, terrible. Wow. I should really know this because I'm supposed to be helping promote this show. So I should have checked that before the podcast. But anyway, dear listeners, I'm going to put some proper time promoting that because there's going to be a Guitar Nerds Live going on at that one. Yeah. So I think,
interesting.
I think Matt, JD and I are going to do a live podcast in Brighton as part of that. So that's going to be good. As in, like, you know, where people would normally play something. It's going to
Doing like you're not going to broadcast it to the world live. No. You're going to record it live in front of people.
Yes, exactly. We'll be taking questions and doing that sort of thing. So I'm excited.
You know,
about
I've got something similar I'm going to try for the first time ever, live podcast recording coming up in May.
Oh, yeah.
We're still ironing out some details, so I can't really give you a full gamut of what we're doing. But the brothers Landreth, Joey Landreth and his brother David, their band's going to be playing in Nashville. And so we're going to go up and some friends are going to go up. Scott from the Effects Loop podcast is going to be coming down. And I'm partnering with Caldwell Guitars there in Nashville. Right. And we're going to do a live recording in store. We're going to go old school, like our old radio broadcast. So,
oh, I love it. That's great.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to do, I'm trying to rope in some guest appearances that are in the Nashville area to come in and hang out and maybe record an episode. I think I'm going to try, I've been reaching out to maybe some manufacturers and some other makers to try to have a couple of giveaways in store to, yeah, you know, entice people to come in and talk about them on the podcast. I'm super excited. I love the concept of a live recording because sure, it makes it feel like those old radio on location type things they would do, you know?
Yeah.
I love it.
That sounds great. We did a couple with back when it was the, when Guitar Nerds was the GAC podcast, we did a couple from the shop with crowds of people coming in, an audience of people, crowds of people. That made somebody, the shop could fit about 30 people in. 30 people. Let's say that. But that was fun, you know. That was always,
tens
it was always
of people.
Nice doing it like that. Yeah. Tens and tens of people. Yeah. But yeah, so that does sound good.
It's a blast. So I love that concept. I'm looking forward to those episodes.
Oh, wicked. Oh, wicked. Well, anyway, I want to talk a little bit about Europe, going to mainland Europe to do a little tour with Polymath. First of all, like, you know, just before I went out on tour, I got to play with my new band, Silas Fennec, as well, that I've got with my partner, Emma. We had our first show in Brighton. Honestly, dear listener, I can't remember if I talked about this last week. I've drunk so much over the last week that everything's a bit of a... I feel like maybe I did, but... That was an awful lot of fun. Got to mix between the American Professional 2 Jazzmaster and the Grez Mendocino for the best part. I also had a Yamaha Transacoustic that I used for an acoustic. So mainly because none of my acoustics have pickups. So that was the only one that had something built in. So I had to use that. I think the Yamaha Transacoustic's fine, but I have nicer acoustics that I'd rather use. I need to get that sorted. Jay gave me a Fender bar pickup that fits in a sound hole years ago that I still haven't put in anything. So I need to do that. That's got to be on my list. Annoyingly, just before I went away on Europe, the day after I left, my new ACS earplugs turned up.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I had to use some cheap ones for the tour, which was a shame. But dear listener, if you're in the UK or Europe, I don't know if ACS, I don't think ACS are over in the US, but
I'm not familiar with them.
Who's the biggest earplug, like molded earplug company in the US?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Joe, you remember that whole conversation we just had about volume?
Yeah.
And you're asking me about earplug companies? I'm not the guy to talk to.
Right.
I have a set of, I actually have them right here on my desk. I have a set of earpiece.
Right.
E-A-R-P-E-A-C-E.
Of course,
earpiece.
Yes. Very good.
That I use. They're, you know, straight out of the store. They're not molded. Uh-huh. I have to use the smallest ones possible because apparently my ear canals are tiny for a person, but that's just I've never felt the need to get molded ones, so these work just fine.
Yeah, I find that those ones, because I have, you know, a similar set of cheap ones that obviously I just had to use for an entire tour.
Yeah,
I find that they cut out far, far too much. And the problem is, when you've got an earplug that's cutting out way too much or muddying things, you're likely to remove them. And then what you're doing is damaging your hearing. So
yes, absolutely.
These are very important. I mean, Jono, the guy who runs ACS, I met him at the Birmingham Guitar Show, which is where I got my ears molded for the second time, because I'd recently lost my ACS molds, and they only keep your ear size on file for 4 years, and I'd had them about eight. So they,
sure.
So I had to get them remolded. But I ended up getting my ears molded by Jono, the guy who owns the company or runs the company. And he's such an interesting backstory. It turns out he was actually an Ashdown artist years ago when he played. He used to be a bass player, used to play for BBC bands.
Oh, well, being an Ashdown endorsee explains why I needed the earplugs.
There you go. Yes, yeah, quite. But he said, yeah, he used to, you know, be a bass player for BBC bands, never used to wear earplugs, and he eventually got chronic tinnitus. And when he started looking into this, he got really angry about the fact that, you know, the BBC hadn't actually offered any support. They hadn't recommended that people get earplugs, and certainly we're talking, you know, 20, 30 years ago, health and safety wasn't what it is today, and so it was just something he just had to deal with. And I don't know the details of this, so I'm going to skirt around it too much. But I believe he took the BBC to court for this, and with the amount of money he won, he set up ACS earplugs and has used. We're actually going to get him on a little bit of a podcast soon to kind of talk about. To talk about that, how important having good earplugs is, because if you like to play stuff really loud, then, you know, it's a good thing to invest in. But I was able to get, you know, you can even choose your color. So I got some nice black ones. They've got a little cord with a little clip so they can attach to the back of my shirt. So, you know, I can take them out without them falling off. And I've opted for a 15 decibel cut that cuts slightly less in the mid frequencies. Which is perfect for bass guitarists, basically. So I can still hear the clarity of the note whilst reducing everything a decent amount. But I know they're not cheap. You know,
whatever, £130-ish, I think, for a set.
That's not terrible, though.
No, no, exactly. I think it's just, it's not a very glamorous thing.
Well, no, neither's buying a $250 mono gig bag, but you got to do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's. I remember when that was, you know, when that sort of money for a gig bag was absolutely outrageous, but now most people have a mono gig bag. So,
well, it's because they're that good. I'm also a big believer in the Reunion Blues ones.
Oh, yeah, they're very good.
I recently was looking at, because I'm starting to gig more again. Uh-huh. And I take at least two guitars to every gig, because, you know, you should. And I was looking at one of those dual mono gig bags, and I was like, $350 for a gig bag. This is not an exciting purchase. I still haven't purchased it yet. Haven't worked myself up into buying, but I really need to. I really need to just break down and do it. But yeah, it's one of those things. Protecting your hearing is a massive deal, especially as a musician. Like, take away, well, I'm going to need touch. So give me touch and hearing, take all my other senses, and it'll suck, but I'd survive.
Yeah.
So, you know, invest in your hearing. Actually, maybe I need to look into molded earplugs if I'm going to be gigging more again and actually get some good ones.
Well, the thing is that once you've got used to them, and if you get the right decibel cut for you and they're molded, it becomes very easy to just keep them in. Like, you know, when I had the molding earplugs, they'd stay in throughout the support bands when I play. Often I wouldn't take them out afterwards, you know, when you're just walking around talking to people, because it's just bringing everything down. And once you're used to that, it's achievable. You're not losing the clarity. And with cheap earplugs, you're bunging, you know, essentially shaped plastic into, I know that's what you're doing with the others, but, you know, I just mean you're just plugging your ears with the other ones. And so everything's muffled. These are very well designed with this specific, you know, the EQ in mind for what's going to maintain clarity without damaging your hearing. So it is, it's potentially worthwhile, I think.
I totally agree.
Yes, absolutely. Well,
also same thing for in-ear monitors. If you do in-ear monitors, get them custom molded. I know that I've got a set of in-ear monitors I hate wearing. They're not comfortable. They work, but I probably need to break down. Because I think with this band, if we start playing a lot more, and we are hoping to play more, I'm probably going to invest in our own in-ear rig so that we can take our in-ear with us so that we can do our own monitoring. Because I just feel like that simplifies setup. That simplifies,
Definitely.
You know.
Sound check is halved in time,
Yeah, and it absolutely means that you're going to hear what you need to hear every time.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Certainly in my band, our sax player runs on in-ear monitoring. Half of that is because, you know, how much an instrument like that is going to feed back if you've got his mix blasting back at him from a monitor a couple of feet away. But yeah, they're, you know, easy to sort out, and they make a big difference. Now, I want to talk a bit about the gear that I went on tour in Europe. Yeah. And first time... So a lot of mainland Europe is so wonderful, and so many countries have such excellent government funding for events and shows. A lot of the venues we were playing in were very lovely, gorgeous, well fitted out, excellent sound systems, wonderful desks, wonderful sound engineers. I guess that meant for the first time on kind of treated stages, that they're designed to let your amps be relatively loud. So almost we ended up having to play a slightly quieter than we would normally, because everything's dealt with so well on those stages. Problem with that, Tim, our guitarist, uses the Fender Bassbreaker 1830, the 30-watt amplifier. And if you check out this amp, they go for not very much secondhand. The reason is they're heavy, they're huge, and they're insanely loud. They don't have any way of attenuating that volume without, because you've got no access to the back panel or any of that stuff, without you actually paying to have a mod done on the back of the amp that we spoke about on the podcast some time ago. But Tim is on 0.8 of a 1. on his volume, because it's just three bands of EQ and a volume. There's nothing else, no gain. That is what he's at in a five piece with a drummer absolutely hammering the drums. You know, I'm playing through a big old bass rig. There's a sax player and we've got a synth player playing three different keyboards. It's a loud, but we're a loud band. And he's on point eight. And on, I think, three out of the six shows we played, the sound engineer asked if Tim could turn down on stage. And the thing is, you can't, because at point eight, the tiniest movement, you're almost off. Like, yeah. He is at the lowest volume he can be, and there be volume, and it was too loud. We ended up, I had a few spare pedals. We ended up having to put a drive pedal in the front of Tim's chain, shut all the gain down off of it, and just use the volume control to reduce it. So we weren't getting the most out of the preamp, which was a shame. It lost some of its sparkle, but we sort of made that up on an EQ later on the chain and stuff. But it required some on-the-fly pedal board fixing to deal with just how incredibly loud this amplifier is.
I am going to recommend, first of all, I've actually recommended that amp. I had Sarah Rudy from the band Hello June on my podcast recently, and she's playing one of the Vox AC-10s, and she wanted something a little more oomph in it, but not necessarily an AC-30. I actually recommended the Bassbreaker 1830 because it is, believe it or not, listeners, it is lighter than an AC-30. But anyway, I think they also made a 112 version in that line, which
they
I actually think was the one.
Yeah,
that was the one I recommended to her. But that's why when I gig, I always, this is not very rock and roll, y'all. I know this is so bad, but I have one of those plexiglass shields that I carry around. I take with me.
Wow. Do you think that makes a lot of difference?
It makes a huge difference, because what it does, it doesn't make a huge difference on stage. Right. To be honest, because it's still reflecting back. You're still hearing it like on the stage. But what it's not doing is not beaming that sound guy in the face.
Yeah.
So now it's stopping that direct mids in the face for your crowd and for your sound guy especially. And so it's much more manageable. And you can do some other things. There's a bunch of people have found other solutions. They use the isolation microphone thing so that also you're not getting the reflections back into the microphone.
Right.
There's some really good options in that way, but highly recommended. I know it's not very rock and roll, but the best part is it's super easy to carry around. It's not a huge hindrance of an extra piece of gear. I actually went to a arts and crafts store. I may have gone to a Michael's or something like that, and I found one of the like felt lined portfolio holders. Like it's just this little thin strip of soft fabric that's felt or feels like felt. That's meant to carry like art projects in, like you put your paintings and your photographs in it and carry it around, right? The shield fits perfectly in it. And so I put it in there. It goes in the back of my car with right next to my amp and my guitars and takes up almost no space.
Right.
And I always have it because you never know. You're going to get on that stage where the sound guy's like, you're down at one, or on my Super Reverb, it's like at like 1.9. It's like this weird point where it just vanishes if you go below that, it's too loud right at it. You put it in front of your amp and the sound guy's happy.
Wow, that's that might actually be a great solution. We'll see. I actually think we're going to have to cut an attenuator into Tim's bass breaker. We've got to do something about it. It's far too loud.
I will say a plexiglass is cheaper than an attenuator. So
yes, yeah, that is true. That is true.
Anyway,
well, one thing I found about bands on mainland Europe, certainly this time around, is whereas over here in the UK, Tim is very unusual in that he brings a combo, and most people don't. In fact, I would say almost every single show we play where we're headlining, we're asked not if we have a cab, it's cab or combo, but the support bands will ask if they can share our cab. They just, people assume that that it's a head and cab, because head and cab is so common. And it's almost about, I always feel very bad getting back to them being like, I'm so sorry, we actually play a combo, so you have to bring your own. In mainland Europe, we didn't play with a single band that used a head and cab. Every single guitarist played a combo, and most of them were Fender
Hot Rod Deluxes, or, you know, a variant of that. Certainly an incredibly, Fender seemed to have dominated mainland Europe amplifiers for kind of proggy, post-rocky, meth, rocky bands.
That amp is brilliant. It is, is it the best sounding amp on the planet? Absolutely not. Is it a good sounding amp that can give you what you need in almost every situation? Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
People can fight me on it. Are they worth fixing when they break? No, toss them. You know, just salvage the speaker for your parts covered, and then move on. You know, that's about it. But and the tubes. But no, just go get another one. There's one listener wherever you are right now. There is a Hot Rod Deluxe on Facebook Marketplace within 50 miles of you for $300. Go buy it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, they sounded great. They sound fantastic. They're such great sounding amplifiers. But yeah, most of the guitar amps were those. One of the only exceptions was someone who had, you know, Acoustic, the company Acoustic. They had the old solid state guitar combos. Of course, Acoustic more famous, I think, for Jaco Pastorius's Acoustic 360 bass amplifier, and kind of, I think they're really known for their bass amplifiers, but. Yeah, a little solid state 112 old acoustic amp with it looked absolutely gorgeous. I don't know how these things ever went out of fashion. They're incredibly cool. They're minimalist. They've got fader based EQ sections on them. This is, you know, there's something of the sort of Mesa Boogie about the control panel to some of them, but they are very cool. I don't actually know how much they go for, and of course trying to search for Acoustic as a brand is impossible on the internet, impossible for me to check.
Your best bet's going on Reverb and looking for one.
But that was the only exception. It sounded absolutely fantastic. So that was interesting. That was my most interesting takeaway from Europe, was how I do find people tend to buy less into new gear whenever I'm playing with European bands. Everything's still, you know, everything's a lot of vintage stuff, not necessarily vintage stuff, but just road-worthy classic options. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't see a lot of, you know, Neural DSP or even Helix or anything like that, you know, whereas I spoke – two months ago when Polymath went on a tour of the UK about how over half the bands were using Helix that we played with.
That's so odd to me, because these same friends are trying to talk me into Quad Cortex or, you know, I've done the Helix thing before. Yeah. And I explained to them, like, because I go to a bunch of shows, but I've got friends, especially this one friend in particular, he goes and sees 150, 170 shows a year. Like, that man is always traveling to hear live music. And right. So I've had him keeping track. It's like, all right, and he's going to see small acts. He's seeing national acts. He's seeing everything. So I told him, I need you to keep track of how often you see a digital modeller on stage.
Right. That's an interesting thing to ask.
Yeah, because he sees so much live music. And yeah. I asked him, you know, take pictures of the guitar player's rig. I want to know how often you're seeing amps and how often you're seeing digital rigs. And he's probably been to, so far this year, 30 or 40 gigs. And I've seen zero modelers. I've seen zero digital rigs. That's one.
Interesting.
I actually saw my very first Quad Cortex in the wild this past weekend. Uh-huh. Not at a church service, not in a worship venue, or not in like a band in a musical, but in like an actual live like festival performance. I saw my first ever, and it was a jazz guitar festival.
Right. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I bet if you and I went to a tech metal festival, we'd see nothing but you know, digital modelers. So there's definitely, I feel like there are genres,
yes,
where they're definitely better for. And we both listen to a lot more rock and roll than, you know, than tech metal. And I think that's probably why we're just out of the right genre. You know, we might as well be saying right now, oh, I can't remember the last time I saw a BC Rich in the world. It's like, no, because yeah, we're not going to those shows. But
yeah, I mean, I'm going to a blues festival and playing next weekend, which is why I'm not going to NAMM. I'm playing this blues festival. I've got a bunch of gigs lined up, and I would put my entire month's salary on I will not see a Helix or a Quad Cortex at this blues festival.
I see. What are you playing at the blues festival?
So it's the Juke Joint Festival in Clarksdale, Mississippi, my hometown. I've got a couple of different gigs. I'm playing acoustic guitar for another guy. He's got a couple of gigs, and I've got a couple of acoustic gigs and a band gig, and then I'm sure I'll pick up another jam or two. This I've played this festival. This is its 20th year. I've played it every year.
That's very cool.
I've played as few as 3 gigs over the weekend before, and I've played as many as 8 over a 3-day span. It can be hectic, but it's my favorite music festival I've ever been to and I've ever played. So
amazing. What gear are you going to take?
That's a good question. I'm going to take my acoustic stuff's going to take up way more room. So I'm going to take 2 acoustic guitars and a resonator.
Okay.
What are the acoustics? The acoustics, I have a Bourgeois OM Vintage that I keep down in D standard. So I'll take that. I have a Larrivé DO5 that I've had for 17 years. I'll keep that in standard. Nice. I love that guitar. I it was my first like proper great acoustic guitar. And right. So and I have a Republic resonator that I outfitted a pickup on. It's a Biscuit Bridge style resonator that I'll play slide on. So I'll take those for the acoustic gigs. And then for electric, I will probably take I'm going to take a small combo, which doesn't make me happy. I want to take a big, rig. Normally, my stage this year that I'm playing on for the festival is an indoor stage. I normally play on an outdoor stage. They have a bunch of daytime stages, and some are outdoor, some are indoor. Since I'm indoor, I'm going to take a smaller amp. So I'm going to take a Tyler JT14, which is a little, it's like a Princeton Reverb, but with a 12-inch speaker.
I'm just looking it up because I'm not familiar with this at all.
Oh, Tyler Amps is great. Tyler Amp is the company I tell people to look at all the time.
Uh-huh.
Because they're hand-wired, well-built. John Brenton, I think is his last name.
Right.
It's like Branton, but with an I. He builds these amps. They're great. They've got a JT14, which is like a Princeton Reverb. They got a JT22, which is like a deluxe reverb.
Right.
They've got, you know, they've got variants of all the popular circuits. Sure. They've got a Voxy circuit. They've got a Marshall circuit. They've actually got a low wattage Dumble style circuit that he doesn't make very often.
They also do a flip top bass.
They do a flip top bass. I've talked to John about getting one of those at some point. I'm going to get
very
one.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And my favorite part, first of all, new, they go for less than a Fender new reissue version of the amp.
Wow.
And used, they go for very affordable prices. So highly recommend them. I think they're great sounding amps. So I'll take that one. And I'll probably take my small pedal board. I may not even take a pedal board. I may just take a King of Tone and just run it directly into the front.
I guess for blues, you don't need an awful lot, do you? If it's keeping it classic. Yep. Just something to excite the front end of the amplifier and you're kind of there.
That's it. That's absolutely it. And if I really need it, I've got trim on the amp.
Right. Have you got reverb on the amp?
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yep. So it's set. I mean, that's super easy. I might take a fuzz. We'll see.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Oh, what? I'd love to go and do a blues festival and just wander around and play shows. That sounds super exciting.
It's such a blast, and it's such a low key festival. Lots of stages, and they've got this whole setup where there's like all these nighttime venues, and like Clarksdale is a small town but has live music 7 days a week, which is odd for a super small town. But on this night in particular, there are places that serve as nighttime venues that wouldn't normally have music at all. Right. So they'll have all these bands set up. And so you buy a wristband that's like, I don't know, 25 or 30 bucks, and it gets you into all of them. And they'll run a little trolley or a little bus that looks like a trolley around town, and you can just hop on and hop off at all the different venues. And so you just bar hop all these venues and hear these bands.
That sounds like an awful lot of fun.
It is. It's an absolute blast. I've played South by Southwest Periphery. I've not played the official festival. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've been to, I don't know, dozens of music festivals. And this is my favorite because of just, it's so like low key. It's like part it's just county fair. Yeah, it's about the music. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely awesome. Oh, I hope you have the best time. And the setup sounds very cool. That's cool. I'm up for kind of a cool, minimal, great sounding setup. What electric are you going to take?
That's a great question. I have a lot more great electric guitars than last year when I went.
Will you just take one, seeing as you're making it such a simple setup? No, you're not going to take one.
I'll take two just in case.
Right.
I'll take two just because if something breaks, you know, I've got a 45-minute set, right? Uh-huh. So if something breaks, I don't have time to change a string. I've got to be able to keep going. So I don't know.
I thought this is 335 territory. Is it not?
That's top of my list. That's absolutely top of my list. I'm going to take the 335, and then I'm probably going to take one of the Novos. I don't know if I'll take the Saris J or the Saris S though.
Okay.
So one's a P90 thing with a tremolo or a vibrato. Then the other is a, you know, three pickup Strat style thing.
Yeah. That's very cool. That's, yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. Let me know what you end up taking. I hope there's some videos or something that I get to.
Yeah, I'll try to get some videos. I'll post some stuff over on Instagram. So listeners, follow me on Instagram at 40 Watt Podcast. And I'll post some pictures.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, dear listener, I didn't mean to mention this at the start of the podcast, but I forgot. After Philip and I finish over here, we're going to head over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we record an entire extra episode. And each week we answer questions from the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. This week, I've been looking at some things, some posts that have more been inspirations for topics for us to talk about rather than exact questions. And I think I'd kind of like to talk around Yogi the guitarist, posted earlier this week to say that the wonderful people at LSL Instruments invited him to build his perfect guitar as part of their artist family, which is incredibly cool. And he's posted pictures of it. It's a gorgeous Telecaster. So I kind of just wanted to, or T-style guitar with a humbucker in the neck. And I just thought, damn, LSL, a great guitar brand that we just don't talk about enough. So I'd like to spend some time talking about the guitars that they do and the interesting options that they offer. And seeing as we've got Philip on the podcast, I could not take inspiration from one of Kyle Harris's comments on the group, who posted to say that his collection's finally complete. He owns one of each of the original run of Ibanez 9 series pedals. So I wanted to talk about kind of these pedals and how cool the 9 series of Ibanez pedals are and why you, dear listener, should own at very least their pink analog delay. But also I just want to talk around other kind of pedal collections, things that are cool to try and collect a few of. And then maybe if we've got time, John By asked the interesting question of baritone bass 6 or 7-stroke 8-string. What's your choice for low end tone and why? So we'll go and talk about those things afterwards. But before we do, I wanted to do a little bit of our show and tell section of the podcast. Because the last couple of weeks, I haven't really got around to it on an episode. And, you know, I've been spending an awful lot of time with the Hampstead Soundworks Comet. Dear listener, I posted a little video of this, a little reel on the Guitar Nerds Instagram. They are very well-built, awesome, British-made
pedals. Obviously, Hampstead, more known for their incredible amplifiers, but their effects range is actually excellent, high quality. You know, they're not cheap pedals. What they are is extremely well built. And what I kind of like about them is they're also, you know, sometimes when you get a pedal that's premium, it's also flooded with controls. And it's almost that versatility equals price hikes. You know, that's how it goes. These are just simple, great pedals that sound good kind of wherever you put any of the controls. They're just designed to be brilliant with high quality components and excellent craftsmanship. I love the Comet the most. They call it their Interstellar Driver. It's a green overdrive pedal, dear listener. It's fantastic. It actually sounds great for bass as well. What's quite handy is you can open up the back and it's got a little one of those mini controls, rotaries in the back, that is a bass cut. So you can wind that completely off and then it's letting through all the low end and it becomes far more suitable for bass. So I appreciate none of you care about that except for me, but what I'm saying is it's a great bass overdrive as well as being a fantastic guitar overdrive. Simple controls, bass, treble, and again, a function that I wish more drive pedals do. Now, KMA do this on a lot of their drive pedals, and I love that they do it. I think it's a very important thing. Having a little switch to change the order of whether it goes EQ before your gain stage or gain stage and then EQ. You know, if you want to run, I mean, the advantage of this is if you want to run EQ into drive, that's a great way of kind of really pushing certain frequencies, making them especially driven and getting some really interesting, unique drive sounds out of them. Kind of muddier, more, I don't want to say extreme, but more full-on drive sounds. Whereas if you run drive followed by an EQ, you can use that EQ to kind of make a more full-bodied tone because the EQ is staying clean after the drive circuit, and you can, it's easier to shape something that's maybe slightly more all-encompassing. It's very, very good. I've got a lot of time for this pedal, and the rest of their pedal range is very good as well. Have you had a chance to check out any of the Hampstead Soundworks stuff?
No, unfortunately, we don't really see a lot of that over here. So I was, you know, the only time I've ever seen a Hampstead in person actually was at the Fretboard Summit last year. Matt from Mule Resophonic was there, who makes the wonderful resonators, and I really want one of his Mavis models, which is this wood-bodied electric resonator kind of thing. Right. He had one at his booth, so I played that. I must have sat there for a half hour playing one of his guitars through that. And then also later that night, Adam Miller, Australian guitarist, opened up for that at the show I was actually in Chicago for, opened up for Ariel Posen and actually played that Hampstead. He borrowed it from Matt for that show. So
That's very cool. That's awesome. That's
literally my entire experience with Hampstead other than seeing them on YouTube.
Yes. Well, of course, Hampstead have a close relationship with Mule. You can, in fact, order Mule guitars from the Hampstead website.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. They have their books open from there. And whenever you see, whenever there's a Hampstead show in the UK, of course, Hampstead also have a very close relationship with Matt from Fidelity Guitars. So they always tend to share a booth, but often there will also be a Mule guitar on the booth alongside Hampstead as well. And they are
such wonderful guitars.
They are such wonderful guitars, such specific sounds. I always think if you want to know what a Mule sounds like properly, you know, not with just YouTube videos or whatever, then listen to Miles End 2 by Ariel Posen.
Yes.
It's just the sound of like downtuned, downtuned solo guitar blues, just edge of breakup, very low, very raspy. Just the guitar, just the focus on some cool, not over the top licks. I think it's the best thing he's ever done, and sonically is just masterworks in interesting blues. You know, you should
those guitars are some of the most inspirational things I've ever played. The ones I played at Fretboard Summit, Sometimes you pick up a guitar and you're like, oh, this sounds good. This is a good guitar, you know? But then sometimes you pick up an instrument that you stop thinking about the instrument.
Right.
That you just play. And I know that sounds like totally hippie, totally like out there, but like sometimes you get into something and you feel something and it changes, and it can be a pedal, it can be an amp, it can be anything. But his guitars were that for me. I just sat there and played. I'm in a room full of builders, and it's small guitar show esque. It's not, you know, it's not NAMM, it's not loud, but still, you know. Yeah, we all get it. Get that music store self-conscious. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I don't want to play too loud. I don't want to, you know, I don't want people to hear my crappy guitar player or whatever you're thinking in your head. I didn't think any of that while playing those guitars. Like, I just played. And like, if there was ever a time where I wouldn't get lost in that moment, that feels like the space. But they were that good.
Yeah.
And I don't know. They're so different. There's nothing else like them.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine, you know, achieving being unique while still being classic, whilst offering something completely modern, whilst not being modern. It's almost anti-modern. You know, I don't know. They're indefinable, but they are absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I mean, before we go off topic too much, this is the sound of the Comet by Hampstead Soundworks. It's just guitars played. I've actually set up a so it's a jazz chorus amplifier model, courtesy of the thing I've forgotten the name of, the IK Multimedia, the thing that I completely forgot
the Tonex.
The Tonex. Thank you. There we go.
You're
we got
welcome.
There in the end. Yeah, thank you. It's just a jazz chorus setup of the Tonex, because I wanted to be like, well, I want every bit of the gain stage to be supplied by the Comet, three or four different guitars and a lead guitar part, just to show the versatility. This is classic sounding overdrive, but it's very, very good. Here it is. So there you go, dear listener and Philip, the Hampstead Soundworks Comet. It's just, I kind of feel like it's one of those pedals that if you just want one drive pedal that sounds properly rock and roll, you'd be hard to top this.
I'm big on just having one drive pedal. This is my unpopular opinion that gets me in trouble with people with like 17 drives on a pedal board. I'm like, why? Why you work so hard?
One great drive and a great boost to run into it. Just get, you know, the almost a second channel kind of out of it. You keep it simple like that. It gives your sound some consistency. And also, if you spend a lot of time working with that drive pedal, you'll learn to know everything about its subtle nuances and you'll get the most out of it. I know I'm speaking as someone who changes my pedal board, you know, almost every fortnight. So that is not me, but I'm sure there are, you know, people better than me that get more out of their guitars. Well,
I mean, if that's what you enjoy doing, you know, I'm not here to stomp all over your joy. You know, you do what you want. It's the same thing with all these people with all the drive pedals. Man, if that makes you happy, it just drives me. It would give me anxiety. Like, I would lose my mind. It's like these massive pedal boards. I'm like, and I've had them. I've had the massive pedal boards, and they did give me anxiety. And I was like, I can't give me like, I need like a nano. Actually, like a Nano Plus is the biggest size pedal board I need.
Right.
Like, I can get by with that. And it's so much easier to swap. Oh, I'm playing this gig. Here, I'll change this pedal out because I need this one for this gig.
So the anxiety-inducing thing for me is I can't imagine going back to not having a switcher. Admittedly, I have the MS3, so it's part switcher, part multi-effects. But, but I still see like people's pedal boards, like Jamie Stillman's pedal board was photographed recently, and that doesn't have a switcher. I was really surprised to see Yvette Young's pedal board without a switcher, and I'm like, I don't understand how you maintain. How do you keep track of everything whilst you're playing stuff without having something that can turn several pedals on and off at once?
I don't do it anymore either. I can't. I used to, and like I had the Boss ES8. I've bought that thing twice, and I've had pedal boards set up with it twice, and it was just moved on because I'll be honest, the issue was not the individual channels. For me, I run such a small pedal board now that it's not that big a deal.
Right, sure.
You know, so it's fine. I just, you know, I can like at most I have, not counting a tuner, I think my small board right now has 6 foot switches because I have three pedals that each have 2 foot switches, right?
Right.
One either tap tempo or does a thing, but I can manage that. I could literally stomp on all of those real fast. Like not that would ever happen. There's no reason for that to ever happen. But I hated programming MIDI on the ES8. I hated it. It was, and I didn't realize that it was bad. I thought it was just MIDI, and I realized, Matt, I'm so sorry. I'm trash talking here a little bit. I didn't realize that the way that program was bad. I thought it was just MIDI until I got a Morningstar MIDI controller, right, and I realized how simple it could be.
Yeah. The Morningstar are definitely, they've got it down. What a brilliant company. Yes. I've never owned any of their stuff, but I've thought about purchasing some of their things. I've watched some of their videos where they talk you through how to get the most out of these pedals. It's just unbelievable how much more access, you know, they can give you.
The video support of showing you how to do literally everything with their product is the reason it's so easy to use.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've had the MC6, and then I immediately, when the MC6 Pro came out, I immediately bought it.
Right. Yeah, you know, I have thought about it a lot. Maybe I should, because I feel like there are things, like I have the Boss GT Core, which I simply don't use because
not enough foot switches.
Yeah, not enough foot. Great sounds, not enough foot switches, and so I can't. You know, I don't get the most out of it. But yeah, something like a Morningstar opens that up. Really, I really regret that actually, because I had the GT 1000, mm-hmm, and the Core came out, and I was like, oh, that'd be great. I can integrate that into a pedal board more easily. So I convinced Matt to let me swap it, and I regret it now. I would much rather have the normal GT, because the Core needs something else with it. But maybe that's the solution. Maybe getting the Morningstar is the thing.
Highly recommended.
We'll see. I'll give it some strong consideration. Now, dear listener, we're pretty much at time for this week's episode of Guitar Nerds. So you can get in touch with us if you like to ask questions or for any reason at all. Email us if you like at info@guitarnerds.net. DM us on Instagram, ask in the open forum on the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group. If you're a Patreon supporter, contact us through the Patreon. A lot of you have been sending me dad jokes. They've been good, but I need a cut above. I've maybe used one person's yet. I need some stronger ones. Come on, people. I believe in you. Send me those great dad jokes, and I'll include them. Anyway, Philip and I are going to head over to the Patreon right now, where we're going to talk about this week's questions of the week. You can join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up and how to support our charming community. You can do that for as little as $1 a month. Philip, where can people check out everything that 40 Watt Podcasts do?
So you can find me, if you really want to get in touch with me or you want to find what I'm doing, you can go over to Instagram at 40 Watt Podcast. Of course, there's a website, 40wattpodcast.com. You can also find me on YouTube. Listeners, please. So the goal this year is to grow YouTube, like to focus on that more. So go hit subscribe on YouTube. I promise you I won't bug you too much. And other than that, you can find the podcasts on YouTube or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Au revoir.
Thank
you, dear listener, for listening to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. But thank you most of all to all of our top-tier Patreon supporters. Without you, none of this would be possible. Thank you to Marcus Deluxe, Scott Guitars, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Rust Meehan, Barry Kresbeck, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jared Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hizau Kanawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pete, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordwick, Scott O'Brien, and Moog Gravit.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.